I had saved up for years for this vacation, and it was, so far, worth every penny. I had never seen such turquoise water, white sand beaches, or anything close to a tropical paradise outside of movies and Google searches, but being there in person was surreal. It was our third day of vacation when we decided to go check out the infamous Blue Holes, and it definitely did not disappoint. The rich ultramarine water contrasted beautifully with the teal water surrounding it, and I was a bit nervous to finally be going scuba diving in open water after only getting trained in the safety of a pool. As the boat pulled up to the massive Blue Hole, I stared through the clear water and wondered how such a deep underwater cave even begins to form. As I peered over the side of the boat, I saw that the deep blue color began to get lighter and lighter. It was then that I realized that it wasn't the color of the water that was changing, but that something massive was coming up out of the hole. I screamed to the guide and he ran over to see what I was pointing at, but then the boat suddenly began to rise and then tipped over. Before I knew it, I was underwater, the taste of salt in my mouth and my eyes stinging. I coughed and I swam hard to follow my air bubbles while fighting the burning in my lungs. As I breached the surface, I gasped for air and looked upwards. There was some giant creature, scaled and winged with a lizard-like snout, but the neck ended in the body of an octopus with scaled tentacles whipping wildly in the air. I didn't know what that was, but I wasn't going to stick around to find out, so I began to swim furiously away. And then I was pushed underwater by what seemed like a truck falling on me, and I choked as seawater filled my lungs. A massive tentacle was pushing me farther and farther underwater, and as I started to black out, all I could think of was that my name is Rick Kitagawa, and this is the Inner Monster Podcast. The Luska, a creature that is part Caribbean folklore, came to me via suggestion, so thanks to Lisa L. for sending this one my way. I had never actually heard of the Luska before, and I have no idea why, as this thing is totally right up my alley. The Luska is a giant sea monster, which alternatively is a giant octopus or giant cuttlefish, or a half dragon, half octopus. Yes, that's right. Holy smokes, how freaking cool is a half dragon, half octopus? It's basically Cthulhu. And if you aren't familiar with H.P. Lovecraft's godlike nightmare creature, well, maybe I will save the great Cthulhu for another episode. But anyway, the Luska is said to live around the Blue Holes near the island of Andros in the Bahamas. And this makes total sense after looking up the Blue Holes, which are gigantic marine sinkholes that are known for their deep blue color in the usual turquoise waters. And these dark blue holes are sometimes quite deep. The largest one, known as the Dragon Hole, yeah, super cool name, found in the South China Sea, is 987 feet or about 301 meters deep. That is crazy. Plus, they're often anaerobic, meaning there is no oxygen in the water, so super crazy bacteria that live off sulfur grow down there. And scientists have studied this bacteria to understand how extraterrestrial life might function. And if I sound super excited, it's because the Luska is rad and I learned about blue holes, which are amazing. Anyway, these incredible underwater sinkholes, as holes that would either house or were carved by the Luska, makes total sense, as in the minds of people just discovering these, what else but some titanic beast would create a 90-story underwater pit? And this really falls in line with the fear of the ocean's depths. It's a scary, dark place that's hard to survive in as a human, and houses super random sea creatures, one of which could totally be a gigantic octopus-dragon hybrid. So this got me thinking a little bit about the terror of the ocean as a metaphor for our fear of going deep with conversations. And it's the depth of conversation that I'd like to dive into today. Pun intended. So let's start with defining what I mean by deep conversation. It is the antithesis of small talk, which is purposefully inoffensive. small talk is for everyone, meaning it's not for a specific person. And this makes it really hard to build connections because everything stays at a surface level. And deep conversations isn't about subject matter specifically. It could be about potentially polarizing conversation topics like white privilege or vaccine mandates or tax brackets, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. Deep conversation is about making human connection, and that could be about monsters, football, living with mental illness, your homebrew. It's subject agnostic, but it does have to be meaningful and resonate with the people you're communicating with. And this is why we avoid it with people we don't know very well. Deep conversations is scary because we don't know what's gonna come up, how the other person will react. It's much less likely we're going to get into a shouting match over the type of ice cream someone likes, but the chances of a heavily emotional argument go way up when talking about something like politics or social justice. Thus, we tend to avoid these deeper conversations in order to avoid conflict. After all, the flip side of meaningful connections is a forceful rejection, and in order to take a chance to find a person that's for us, we might also find someone who is not for us. So to find these connections requires vulnerability, and we're often not socialized to be comfortable with vulnerability. The fear we have is actually baked into the definition itself. When we're vulnerable, we're open to attack, which really stems down to being rejected. And I often think about rejection and vulnerability, especially around personal relationships. Take the idea of confessing one's feelings for a love interest. There's a lot of tension for most people around the fear of getting it wrong and looking over-interested. And while we can debate the strategic nature of creating desire through tension, I honestly think that the, in my mind, terrible dating advice around waiting days or whatever to text after a date is more about preventing the blow to one's ego of looking overly interested when they're less interested in you than it is about creating tension. But connection is often created through vulnerability, and this isn't just romantic relationships, it's human interaction. And with human interactions, the quickest way to build trust is to extend it first. And there's a sense of vulnerability and risk involved in doing just that. So we often miss chances of human connection by avoiding the deeper conversations, especially when they have to do with our own shortcomings. Whether they're things like one's battle with addiction, or current employment status or lack thereof, or our relationship status, we've created stories around what these things mean. And often these stories reinforce a feeling of being less than and feelings of shame around who we were or who we are. And that feeling of shame isn't fun, so we try to avoid it by not talking about it. But bottling up your feelings is actually the antithesis of authenticity. After all, by not acknowledging and working through our own feelings and fears and hopes and dreams, we are literally not being authentic to how we're actually feeling. And authenticity, and by extension vulnerability, is exactly what we need to truly feel like we belong. So I totally understand why all of this diving deep into conversations can be really hard. We need authenticity to feel belonging, and to be authentic, we need to express ourselves. But by expressing who we are, we open ourselves up to attack and criticism by lowering the shields and getting vulnerable. But at the end of the day, if people aren't into you, then they're not for you. So why stress about what they think? If you like rock music, do you care what classical music fans think about your favorite band? If you're an expert on ice cream, do you really care what a German Shepherd, the dog, not a sheepherder from Germany, thinks about your favorite ice cream? Well, you might, but you shouldn't, because their opinion really shouldn't matter at all. And I know it's really difficult, but at the end of the day, you have to remember that just as there are things that we completely disregard because it's not for us, we might be disregarded by others because we're not for them. But if you never take the chance to be vulnerable, you won't ever be able to find those who are for you. I also want to be clear that, especially if you've had a bad experience, been betrayed, been hurt before, this all sounds like ridiculous advice. But I want to be clear, it's not about oversharing or just being completely vulnerable without any safety measures. Like most things, it's about slowly leaning in and moving forward a bit at a time rather than jumping headlong into things. Whether that's looking at who are the types of people you've clicked with in the past, or having a strategy in mind in broaching deeper conversations, you want to build a custom system that will slowly immerse you into the deeper side of the conversation pool rather than just diving right in regardless of the nuance. Consider what warning signs you might be on the lookout for in order to parse who you are not for and how much you'd be willing to overlook them. After all, there's red flags that are sure signs of danger, and then there are also maybe yellow signs that might require caution and extra time to test the waters before diving deep, but aren't necessarily a deal breaker. So you don't have to jump into deep conversations all the time or when you first meet people. But if you're always afraid of showing how you feel, if you're always afraid of showing a bit of who you truly are, of making assertions, of putting yourself out there, you are positioning yourself at a disadvantage when looking for people to truly connect to. While you don't need to bare your soul to everyone you meet, and you probably shouldn't, what first steps might you take to get a little deeper in your conversations? And what guardrails do you need to build in order to support those first steps? That's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening to the Inner Monster podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to check out all of our other episodes wherever you get your podcasts or visit innermonsterpodcast.com. And if you feel so inclined, please spread the word and share this with a friend, or leave a review, or subscribe to get the podcast each week, every Inner Monster Monday. And now, a quick word from our sponsors. If you want to hear Inner Monster podcast episodes before anyone else, consider joining my Patreon at patreon.com/rickkitagawa, where you can get ad-free episodes, discounts on creepy art, and even coaching packages. That's patreon.com/rickkitagawa. I hope to see you there. Thank you so much, and I hope you have a monstrous day.